Does your employer pay for training or education that could help you in your job today? Then, IT folks, this is for you. CBT Nuggets offers online IT training that's affordable and, dare we say, fun. From networking and cybersecurity to data science, CBT Nuggets has the training to get you through the workday. With our courses, you'll build real-world skills with short, engaging videos, hands-on virtual labs, and quiz questions to test what you've learned. Go to cbtnuggets.com and check it out. Our online platform launches right in your browser. No expensive hardware or software is needed to start. The best part? You can watch and learn at your own pace, on your schedule. cbtnuggets.com. It's IT training for all levels. From beginner-level courses to advanced network training, our expert instructors give you information that's informative, meaningful, and engaging. We've been helping learners for over 25 years, and we're a trusted name in IT training. So tell your boss it's time for CBT Nuggets IT training. Go to cbtnuggets.com and get started today.
One of the big things that people talk about in the context of social media is that we're being manipulated, that the algorithms are constructed in such a way that the companies get us to do things that maybe it's not so good that we do. But I'm not totally convinced of this. If Facebook sends me an ad for a towel, as it has done, where the sand of the beach doesn't stick to the towel and just comes off, and then I buy that towel, yeah, maybe it's the result of some targeted marketing, but I want to say thank you. That towel's awesome. I got to have, I don't know, three of them. They're great. So at what point, though, does engaging with the algorithm or engaging with the content that's generated by an algorithm constitute manipulation? When has it crossed a line? I need help thinking about this for the reason I just articulated, which is that it seems fine to me in a number of contexts for social media to influence me in various kinds of ways, like showing me ads for things that I want to buy. So to help me think through this, I talked to Michael Klenk. He's an assistant professor of practical philosophy at the Delft University of Technology, and he runs through a number of ways of conceiving of manipulation that he actually rejects that are popular, but he thinks are not quite right. And then he gives what he thinks manipulation amounts to, and then concludes that the algorithms that sort of govern our social media lives are manipulative in an ethically objectionable way. So we talk about maybe it's the fact, if it is a fact, that the companies or the developers at those companies want to manipulate us with bad intentions. We talk about the way in which algorithms or the content, it serves up content that appeals to our emotions in various ways. And we talk about the fact that usually the content isn't giving us good reasons to do what we want to do. So those are three theories, if you like, about the nature of manipulation, and Michael rejects all of them. Instead, Michael defends the following view. He thinks that the thing is that algorithms are operating in a way to get us to do what the developers want us to do in whatever way it takes. It's a kind of apathy towards what's good for us. It's not positively wanting what's bad for us. It's not wanting what's good for us. It's, I just need them to click on the thing. I don't care how they get to click on it. I'm going to throw out a bunch of content and different ways of structuring that content in order to get them to click on the thing. And that, Michael argues, is what constitutes manipulation in general. So by a person, if I treat you that way, I'm engaged in manipulative behavior. And similarly, if the algorithm or the people behind the algorithm treat you that way, they're similarly being manipulative in an ethically objectionable way. What are we aiming for, really? Michael asks. And his main view there is that when you and I are talking to each other and I'm trying to get you to do something, we are engaged in a kind of deliberation together. And so what it takes to be non-manipulative engagement is that we engage in this kind of collaborative deliberation. And then the question is, what would it take for an algorithm to do that sort of thing? Okay, that's what this episode is about. If you're one of the many people listening to this episode on a mobile browser, then please go to Apple or Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, and subscribe there. If you like this show, you might like my book, also called Ethical Machines. You might like my Substack, readblackman.substack.com. You can email me to tell me how much you like all of it, or frankly, how much you hate it, at em@readblackman.com. And if you want to see me speak in person and a bunch of other people speak in person, I'll be at the conference called Compliance in the Age of AI. It's June 12th to 13th. It's in San Francisco. There's going to be lots of other great speakers there. I didn't mean to call myself a great speaker. Let's just say there'll be other speakers there that are great. And that includes people from OpenAI, IBM, Salesforce, NASA. Should be a really cool conference. If you want to check out that conference, then you can go to opalgroup.net/ethical machines. Again, opalgroup.net/ethical machines. Opal is OPAL. And there's a discount code, READ, R-E-I-D, 50. READ 50, and you'll get 50% off. I hope to see you there. Okay, enough about that. Now let's go talk about manipulation with Michael. All right, so Michael, if I understand your view rightly, there's a common view of manipulation that you think is just wrong. And then there's an alternative view of what constitutes manipulation that obviously you think is the right one. So first of all, do I have that right so far? And if so, first, walk me through what you think is the common conception or conceptions of manipulation and where they go wrong.
So a key tenet of it is that manipulation is some form of malicious interference in the business of somebody else. And that requires two components. One is the intention to influence somebody else. Now, that is pretty uncontroversial and I think required, because we want to distinguish manipulation from purely accidental influence.
Sure. I can be an influencer and I can wear some branded hat on my head. You see my video, that influences you to buy it, but me as an influencer hasn't manipulated you to buy that hat.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
So what I think about when I think about accidental influence, that perhaps I'm, as a private person, I'm wearing a cologne and I've pass you in the street, and that has an influence on you as you smell it. But that seems purely accidental. I think with an influencer already, there might be a sort of intention behind what they do. So we might classify that as a kind of purposeful or intentional influence. But I think that's pretty uncontroversial. And also something that I accept. What I think is more problematic, but still very widespread, is the idea that what the manipulator does is something malicious, nefarious, and bad-intentioned. So typical views are that the manipulator tries to influence you behind the back. They try to subvert or bypass your rationality. They try to harm you in some way, undermine your autonomy, perhaps induce a mistake in your beliefs, desires, or emotions. And all of these things seem to be pretty bad, and I think that asks too much of the manipulator. That really portrays the manipulator as a malicious, nefarious actor who's really committed to that kind of bad outcome.
I could see the undermining bit. There's one aspect of the definition you just offered, which was undermining of something or other, autonomy or rational capacity, something along those lines. The nefarious bit doesn't seem to be necessary, though, as I think you're getting at, which is because I can manipulate you with good intentions. I can manipulate you in a paternalistic manner to try to get you to do what's good for you. And that would still count as a manipulation, but it'd be, I don't think that benevolent manipulation doesn't sound oxymoronic or self-contradictory or something along those lines.
No, I agree, I think. And many do make room for that. So the large debate about nudging, for example, recognizes that there might be nudges, which if you follow the idea, then they are by definition intended for good outcomes for the recipient. What current views of manipulation still have in common is that the means by which they achieve or by which the manipulation comes about, these means are still on the nefarious, bad, undermining side. And I think current views of manipulation portray manipulation as intended to take this problematic path. And the contrast case, what I and other people have been thinking about, is simply that you might use very good, reasonable arguments to manipulate people. And in that case, there's nothing that is, it's not in the means or the outcome of the influence where it detects this nefariousness or the badness.
Okay, so a couple of things. So one thing that you're saying, I take it, is manipulation is standardly conceived of as a bad thing, independently of the ends to which you are shooting, the goal towards which you're striving, because there's something about them. Manipulation is about a certain kind of method or a set of methods or a set of processes that are itself morally objectionable. Your point, I take, is that no, there are methods of manipulation that are perfectly on the moral up and up. Do I have that right so far?
I think to start with, you can distinguish it amongst the kind of these three types of views about manipulation that are common. One is indeed that manipulation is tied to specific outcomes. So manipulation always leads to a loss of autonomy or a harm for the person that is targeted. And I think this is wrong because, as you just suggested, there are cases of paternalistic manipulation or manipulation for the ultimate good of the person being manipulated. Others try to locate the manipulation in the way the influence comes about. So the process, so let's call them process views. And perhaps the poster boy of these views is the idea that manipulation proceeds by emotional influence. So that's usually people draw a contrast. So there's this high road and that's rational, reasonable influence. And that contrasts with exploiting and using your emotions. I think this is also problematic because we often need emotional decision-making and the emotional decision-making is not as such bad.
Do you have in mind something like, if you get me to care for my child in a certain way that I wasn't caring for them before, by playing on my love for my child in a way that I wasn't previously appreciating, that would be a kind of process emotional manipulation, but it would be on the ethical up and up.
Yes, I think that's true. I think that would even be, because some of these views say that if you use emotional influence, it's coefficient for manipulation. I think that might be a counterexample to these views, because I think just because I appeal to your emotions, that doesn't make something manipulative, at least not in a morally problematic way.
Yeah, I take it there's going to be some kinds of, there's a way of characterizing emotions as animalistic, as non-rational at a minimum, if not irrational in some cases. And there's surely some cases where, I think at least there are surely some cases of manipulation in which someone is preying on those non-rational emotions. But there's also cases of rational emotion that point us or that constitute our attunement to what's of value. So when I love my children, it might be rational in the sense that it's attuned to the value of my children or the value of parenthood or the value of our relationship or something along those lines.
Yeah.
Similarly, love of music or something like that. That might be an emotion that I have, but it's the appropriate response to music. It's a rational response to the value of music. So we can't just say writ large manipulation just is the sort of tinkering of people's emotions, because some of those emotions are the rational engagements with the world.
So we're just falling away. I think I didn't catch the last part, but I think you said we cannot just equate manipulation with the tinkering of emotions.
Because some of those emotions are rational engagements with constitute.
Yeah.
At least in part, rational engagement with the world.
Yeah. Fully agree. Exactly. And so what this shows is that we cannot just have this blunt view. Emotions are bad. Irrational influence. That has been another major view that says the manipulator intentionally tries to bypass or subvert. I think here the more important one is to subvert your rationality, perhaps by instilling an emotion that is in that situation irrational. And I think here, so now we're more at the point, because now we see manipulation as something that can have ultimately good outcomes. But still, we see it as something that is intended to, as a bad thing, in the sense of it's intended to subvert your rationality. So it's intended to use a means that is not per se good.
So that's your counter-take. That's the one that you want to dig deep into. That's the one you want to defend.
No, that's what I want to. I want to get away from that. One step over.
That one too you don't like?
Yes.
What? Why don't you like this one?
Yeah, so because philosophers have pointed out, and I followed the path, is that there's also cases where I might use good rational arguments in a manipulative way. And that suggests that this irrationality, this appeal to irrational means of influence, that's not necessary for manipulation after all.
So is an example of that sort of thing where it's something like, I give you an argument in the rational sense of the term argument, I give you strong reasons, good reasons for doing X, whatever it is, going to the store now, but they're insincerely offered because by getting you to go to the store, I can go do the nefarious thing. So I tell you, let's say, I don't know, let's be married in this situation. And I give you good reasons for going to the grocery store to go get milk or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it so that I can have the time to have a phone call with my mistress.
Exactly. So I think that's the word that you mentioned, insincerity. That's a very important one. I think that gets very close to the heart of it. Like an ingenious example was offered back in 2014 by Moti Guhrin. He envisioned this case of where you have a strong believer in God, a theist, and that person really hangs there. Basically, they think their life depends and the meaning of life depends on there being a God. And now you want to get at the inheritance of that person. And now you tell them, give them good rational arguments for the non-existence of God. And then that person ends up killing themselves. So that example is a very crass case intended to show that you give good, true, reasonable arguments for a true conclusion, let's suppose, but it still seems utterly manipulative. And and I think that the case that you give is much more mundane, much more realistic. I think the world, and I think the world is, and that is really why I'm convinced of this view. The world is chock full of these examples where we just want to get something out of another person. We want them to buy our shit, buy our products, surf on our websites.
Shit is fine. We want to sell shit. That's fine.
Good. Vote for us and do what we want. And we basically think about the most effective way to get them to do it.
Yeah. I've had this recently. My daughter was saying, she's 8, and she was saying something like, I forgot exactly what it was, but that she felt bad for one of her classmates.
Mm.
And I believed her, but she kept saying it. And at one point I said, I know that you feel bad for your classmate, but I think the reason you're saying it now is so that we think that you're a good person, that you're a good and kind person.
Mm.
And she smiled and she said, I do feel bad. I said, I know that you feel bad, but that's not the reason you're telling us that you feel bad. You're telling us that you feel bad because you want us to think that you're a kind person.
Yep.
And she admitted it. She agreed. So she was engaging in a form of manipulation. And that's at 8. So now I'm a little bit worried for what happens at 15. Let me get a grip on where we are. So we're trying to find an account of manipulation. And in a minute, I'm going to ask you why it matters that we get the account right. But I want to get the whatever's on the menu. I want to get it out. To get it out.
Yep.
The first one I take it was the sort of that manipulation requires nefariousness. We said, no, manipulation doesn't require nefariousness because you could do it paternalistically for their good. That's the sort of first kind of account of manipulation that you want to reject.
That's a negative outcome.
Sure, negative outcomes.
Yep.
Sure, that's fine.
Okay.
Second kind of manipulation or account of manipulation that you want to reject is what you called process manipulation.
Yep.
And it sounds like there are two varieties of that. One was the process is one in which you appeal to their emotions, and that's no good because there are rational emotions. And the other kind of process account of manipulation is one where it's a process by which the rationality of the other is undermined, of the target is undermined, but that's no good because you could have good arguments given to the person that constitute your manipulation.
Yeah.
And so what we're waiting for, I take it, is some third account, your account of manipulation. Is that right? Is that where we are?
Yes. In a minute, because I want to summarize these two views, the process views and the outcome views. Take them together.
Yeah.
And I think that both of them, still, the fundamental idea is that manipulation is nefarious influence. It's either influence aimed at a bad outcome, or it's influence aimed at a bad, deficient process. And both of them ascribe quite a lot to the manipulator in terms of the manipulator is committed to achieving this bad outcome or committed to instilling that bad process. And now here's the step to, I think, the new view of manipulation, which asks less of the manipulator and just says the manipulator is indifferent to some ideal of interaction. They want to influence you effectively, and they just don't care how they do that, as long as it is effective. And what the crucial point here is, I'm not committed to some bad outcome. I'm merely indifferent to some good, positive constraint on how to influence other people.
All right, so give me an example of this. Give me an example.
So I think that the online world lends itself well to examples. So many people have the intuition that recommender systems are manipulative. And this indifference view would explain why, because they have clear goal. In many cases, it's to increase retention rates on a website, and they optimize for that goal. And how they reach that goal is absolutely unconstrained by any goal to reveal reasons to the user. That doesn't say, here's why you really have good reason to watch this next weird YouTube video. It just says, I can look at Reed's history at comparable users, and this is what I guess will work for him.
Okay, let me try an example based on that, but not using recommender systems yet. Although I do want to get into that.
Yeah,
I think that you think that certain kinds of salespeople can be manipulators, but they're agnostic about the truth or falsity of what they're saying. They don't, they're agnostic about whether this is good or bad. So back in the day, before I started graduate school, after I finished college, for one summer, I worked at a rental car company. And among the things I was asked to do was to sell insurance for the cars. You know, you want to sell in case something happens. And so I was given a variety of techniques by which I could sell people insurance.
Yeah.
But let's suppose I was agnostic or I hadn't thought very much, let's say, about whether these techniques were undermining of autonomy or preying on base emotions or whatever it was. I didn't think very much about it. I was just told to say these things, so I would say them.
Yeah.
And let's say I'm also agnostic about whether them having insurance is good for them or bad for them. Maybe I say, I don't know. Maybe the insurance that they have anyway is fine. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I don't care. I just know that I should say these kinds of things in this kind of order, as I was told by the sales training program, to elicit the outcome that I want, which is for the customer to buy insurance for the rental car.
Yep.
So that would be a case of manipulation, but I'm indifferent to the means, indifferent to the end.
Yes. Yes.
Is that a fair picture?
Yes. And I think this is, it's a fair picture. And I think this is why the indifference view gives you a good picture of the manipulation. Because when I look with, say, the traditional perspective, and I'm trying to ascertain whether you had the intention to lead me astray, or whether you had the intention to undermine autonomy, or whether you had the intention.
Yeah, I just said have one.
Yes. Then, then I'm basically amiss here. And I think this is why this is a more accurate characterization of the phenomenon.
Yeah. Okay. So by these lights, intending to manipulate is not a necessary condition of being manipulative. Intending to do harm is not a necessary condition.
Not.
Suppose I say something like this. It sounds to me like you're spelling out cases in which, like the salesperson case or the bullshitter case, and there's probably lots of overlap between those two kinds of cases, is one in which there's manipulation, but the person doesn't care that they're being manipulative.
Yeah.
But if I said that just means that I still want to know what the hell manipulation is.
Yeah.
As opposed to other forms of influence.
Yeah.
It can still say manipulation is a specific form of influence about which the person engaged in it might not care that they're doing it.
Yeah.
Or might not care about the harm or the benefit that they produce.
Yeah.
Right? So I still don't have an account of manipulation on your view. I have the absence of a requirement for something to be a case of manipulation, but I still don't know what manipulation actually is in a positive sense. Is that fair?
I think there's a view on that. And so in my view, that's basically two conditions. One is that you want to, so you engage in influence to have a certain effect. So it's not accidental. And the explanation of why you choose a particular means of influence, why you say this rather than saying that, why you say, well, the insurance is good for you when you're 80 years old, or why you say all your friends have this insurance, why you choose these different tactics, or your wife would recommend this insurance. And the explanation for why you choose any of them is not to reveal reasons to your interlocutor. And I think that's a crucial distinction from persuasion. Persuasion is, I think, to be trying to reveal these reasons. And I think that's the essence of manipulation.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Do you think so the positive definition is you're trying to achieve an outcome, and the means by which you achieve that outcome is more or less through whatever it takes. Maybe there's going to be some guardrails, right? Some people are not going to, if death threats would work, they still wouldn't do it. That would be beyond the pale for them. So they're not going to do they're not going to go that far, but it's something like, I don't care if I have to say X or Y, as long as I get them to do the thing or even to believe the thing, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So do you think, are most salespeople, one question is whether being manipulative in this sense entails that something is morally bad. So is the manipulator, especially because they're associated with the bullshit, are manipulators, by virtue of being manipulators on the account you've given of what it is to manipulate, is it ethically bad? I guess that's the first question.
Yes. So I think I haven't really figured that out completely, but I think it's a non-ideal form of influence because it starts from this ideal of human interaction where we try to reveal reasons to each other, aid each other's understanding. And the background idea is that we have engaged in some form of common pursuit of truth and reasons for what we have reasons to do. In that sense, there's like a detriment to that. I'm not taking the high road. But I think it might be perfectly fine in many situations and outweighed by pragmatic considerations. When you're in a close relationship and you have some, that there's probably lots of manipulation going on in a very benign sense.
So let's take this case again of me telling my wife, giving her reasons to go to the grocery store, not because I want to talk to my mistress, but just because I want some time alone. Yep. I just need a little bit of me time. And so I tell my wife, hey, maybe we should go to the grocery store, pick up X, Y, and Z, blah, blah, blah. And I give her, while you're there, you can pick up that thing that you wanted to pick up, whatever it was. And it's perfectly acceptable for me to make those kinds of suggestions. I have really given her good reasons, but I'm indifferent. I have this attitude of indifference towards, I'm just saying these things. I wanted to get her out of the house.
Yep.
That was really my goal. Yep. And so you might think, you didn't do the wrong thing. I didn't do the wrong thing in getting her to go out.
Mm.
I didn't do the wrong thing in giving her the reasons.
Mm.
Nonetheless, there's something shitty about my character in that situation, the way that I chose to engage. Surely a better way to approach the situation was to say, hey, listen, I could use a little bit of time to just chill. Maybe you can go out and give her the actual real reason why I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And then, I haven't wronged her. I haven't betrayed her, arguably. But nonetheless, there's something morally deficient about the way that I chose to interact with her.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And there's an interesting question whether, you know, different views of manipulation might be actually talking past each other or might be compatible insofar as some are talking about the action, the reasons that are given or the emotions that are stoked, and they try to evaluate what makes that manipulation. And others, more likely my account, are perhaps more interested in what is evaluating the motivation of the manipulator or the source of the manipulation. But I think there's a close connection. It's not really that far apart.
So let's take a step back and explain to me I hate saying I'm a philosopher, but whatever, as a former philosopher professor, if not a philosopher, whatever, I could see why this is just intellectually interesting for its own sake, as it were, just trying to figure out what the hell is manipulation. Mm-hmm. But is there a bigger picture about why it matters that we get the account of manipulation right? And you started getting at it with talking about recommender systems, so I wonder if that's part of the bigger picture.
Yep.
So is there a bigger picture? Is there a pragmatic upshot? Does it say something about our interactions with other people and or with, say, recommender systems or other forms of AI? Why does all this matter that we get it right?
Yeah, so I won't enter any kind of self-psychoanalysis why I'm interested in manipulation. But the philosophical journey was that I also did metaethics in my PhD, and I was concerned with evolutionary debunking. But the long story, the basic of it is basically that there's all these hidden influences on our moral beliefs, you know, new kinds of evolutionary psychological explanations. And that has interesting philosophical ramifications. And this old fascination with, why do we believe what we believe? Am I the master of my ship here, or is this some kind of, you know, dark hidden influence? So I think this was there to begin with. And then around after my PhD, 2018-19, the media was full of the Cambridge Analytica scandal at Facebook. And everywhere you would read the claim, Facebook, big tech is manipulating us. They are manipulating.
Yeah, sure.
They are manipulation is everywhere. And I felt the pull of social media, like you have to check LinkedIn every 5 minutes or something. So I felt, okay, this is weird, what's going on? And so I had a personal research project on first the ethics of social media. And manipulation would have been one part of that research project to figure out, is social media manipulative? And then it's basically I discovered this, what felt like a green field. Lots of claims about manipulation, but no theories really. So this claim that Facebook is manipulating us was rarely, if ever, substantiated by saying something like, Facebook is manipulating us because the conditions of manipulation are 1, 2, 3, and these conditions are met.
Yeah.
It's like kind of airing.
You're definitely not going to find that in popular media.
No, but also then of course, this was also already an academic debate. And it was also completely lacking.
So that's interesting. A couple of things. Number one, I saw a conversation with Shoshana Zuboff of surveillance capitalism fame and Luciano Fleury, who now is a professor at Yale, right? And they had this conversation about manipulation and targeted ads. And they kept talking about how it's an affront to human dignity. And I had no idea what the hell they were talking about. I just thought, I don't know. Facebook shows me an ad for a towel that I think is cool because the sand doesn't stick to it, so it's great for the beach. And then I buy a towel. I don't think my human dignity has been undermined by virtue of them serving me this ad for a towel. So I just never understood it. And then other times I just thought, and I posted about, I had literally just a LinkedIn post, not some big article that I wrote. Just what's manipulation? If they show me something that I reasonably want and then I buy it, great. If they show me something that makes me happier, great. Where's the manipulation?
Exactly.
In some cases, they're just giving me reasonable incentives or something along those lines. If they appeal to my emotions, to our earlier points, so what? My life is largely constituted by my emotions. I love rock climbing, and so I buy rock climbing gear. I don't feel that because my love was used for rock climbing that I've been manipulated. Or I love my children, and so they show me something that my children would love. I don't think that I've been manipulated because they preyed on my love for my children. That seems like a reasonable thing to prey on in a sort of non-pejorative sense. Yeah, I could see why you'd also, your philosophical antennae would be raised and ask, what do you mean by manipulation?
Yeah. And from then on, it was basically a kind of endlessly fascinating story, I really have to say. That there's some good philosophy already, and that was there for some years. That really interestingly picked up, of course, in recent years because of the concerns about new technology and manipulation. So that was something that I could latch onto and build on.
Do you think that all these claims about social media being manipulative, I view with a great deal of skepticism? I'm not inclined to believe the technologists when they say, oh, we can push these buttons in your head and we can make people dance and we can get them to hit the like button. And we can get them to... I think that's bullshit. That's a nice way of engaging in some self-aggrandizement. Yeah. Look how powerful we are. But I don't really buy it. Is that your view? Do you think that it actually is quite powerful? Is there a robust literature on this with which I'm unfamiliar?
There's a large literature on behavior change methods. That's mainly from the medical health field. So basically, how can I intervene and help you get rid of smoking and your alcohol addiction and gambling addiction and whatnot?
Yeah.
Results, that there's really systematic review studies done. The results are these behavior change interventions have modest effects. And there, of course, they cite problems with difficulty of interacting with your health practitioners. They are not always there. You talk to them once a month and then they're gone. I think that's this theory-driven behavior change is one aspect. And the other aspect is the behavioral economics literature, which has a similar kind of the idea here is, okay, we now understand much better how human beings make decisions. It's much less rational than commonly thought. So let's use that to influence them in a more effective way. And the proponents of nudging, of course, say it has massive effects. And critics say it has very little effects. And there's very little empirical review work on that, that kind of rigorously tests these grandiose claims. And what there is shows that there is really only small effects so far.
Yeah. And these people making the grand claims, they have financial incentives to say the really big thing, right? If you're a behavioral economist and you go around saying, look at how powerful this stuff is and what it can do, the financial incentive to saying such things, aside from selling books and being interviewed in the news and all, is that then you get hired by all these businesses to sell stuff. But
it's the same.
It just reeks to me of self-service.
Yeah, it's the same. There's also a risk, of course, that if you're a critic of all of these developments, and you want to point out that there's risks, then you might also overplay the actuality of the problem right now. Because that, of course, also would serve your end or my end, because I'm writing articles about the ethics of manipulation. And so people better take it seriously, as far as I'm concerned.
So there's two things I want to say. I'm not exactly sure if they fit together or how they fit together. The one is that I take it that your account of manipulation allows us to say things like the algorithm is manipulative.
Yeah.
And the algorithm is manipulative because it doesn't have attitudes. And so it's indifferent. It has no attitude towards whether or not the reasons or what it's showing you is good or bad or whatever. It's, as it were, just trying to produce an outcome. It's trying to produce the outcome for which the algorithm was optimized. And if you think that intention is necessary, then you just don't get to say things like algorithms are manipulative for the reason that they don't have intentions. And so that's, I take it, a good thing about your account. That's a nice thing that we get to say things like the algorithm is manipulative.
Yep.
So that's nice. And then I take it that the other thing that sort of piggybacks on this is you do think, and I think it's plausible that there's something deficient about the relationship between a manipulator and the target of manipulation. Yep. That there's something, even if the wrong thing isn't being, at least this is the way that I characterized it earlier, even if the wrong thing's not being done, there's something deficient there. I located it in something like the character of the person. Yep. I guess we could say something, if I don't know if this is metaphorical or not, but the character of the algorithm, so to speak.
Yep.
There's something deficient. There's something morally bad there. I think it's a problem with the relationship. So to give the example again of giving my wife the good reasons to go to the store so that I could have some alone time, there's something deficient about that method of communication.
Yep.
And so then you might think that the extent to which our relationships with each other are mediated by necessarily manipulative algorithms, because they can't have the attitudes, yep, that's making for a bad, deficient society more generally. There's other bad things going on, yep, in the world, but just that algorithmic mediation is itself a form of necessarily increased manipulation.
Yeah, so I said that before. I'm not sure I would stand by that now, whether they need to be necessarily, yeah, manipulated. Because I think the way to get rid of intention in a view of manipulation is, I think, to talk about the purpose of the influence. So why am I saying this? Why are you saying to your wife, hey, you should go to the store and buy some salad? Why do you do that? And now, yeah, here's an explanation of that. And insofar as if this kind of serves a purpose why you say that, I think this is a potential candidate for manipulation. And then we just need to ask, why do you say it? Are you indifferent to the revealing reasons? If so, you are manipulative.
Yeah.
But we can say that animals are manipulative because they show purposeful behavior, even though they might lack intentions in the full-blown sense. And algorithms can be manipulative because they show purposeful behavior in the sense that they do something because they want to achieve some goal. Now, it's an interesting question whether algorithmic systems can be designed in a way that avoids manipulation. So can we have decision support systems whose goal is to reveal reasons to the user, to not only say, hey, buy climbing gear, but here's why you should do that, or why this is a good climb gear. So I'm just saying, perhaps there's a way, and I hope there's a way to build these systems that are not necessarily manipulated.
I see. So instead of something like, we're going to maximize for clicks.
Yes.
Rather, it's going to be, I'm going to put this sort of rather grand, but we're going to maximize for clicks on the condition that clicking actually is conducive to their welfare, something like that.
Yeah, or that in some weird sense, you understand why you have reasons to click. That's some philosophers' versions of Facebook.
Yeah.
I think I wanted to add, I think that's actually a shocking story, is that the picture that you painted with our interactions being mediated by algorithmic systems that are perhaps necessarily manipulative, I think that's an important scenario to draw attention to. And what I find important about it is that we don't need to imagine that there's these nefarious bad actors, propagandists, and evil salesmen, yeah, who want to lead us astray. We can imagine that there's just good people wanting to build engaging products. And in the course of that, they end up designing very effective, but ultimately manipulative influence. Mm. And kind of the most illuminating example is that there's this book, Hooked, How to Build Habit-Forming Products. And Harry Pricknell, yeah, the father of dark patterns, theories of work on dark patterns, points out that the hook cycle to build habit-forming products is basically a version of the dopamine addiction cycle that is studied for a long time in the medical field. But now we have design students and people, entrepreneurs and startup people who want to build great products who say, oh, let's get this book, let's build habit-forming products. And actually, yeah, they're building addictive stuff. And I think this is a sort of where there's an easy slippery slope into the pursuit of effective influence leads us to manipulative influence.
Let me see if I have this right now. What's going on when someone manipulates us? And they could do it, as it were, directly in conversation, or they could do it mediated by an algorithm.
Yeah.
it counts as a case of manipulation if it's trying to get you to act in a way that brings about the output that the manipulator wants or the outcome that the manipulator wants, while the manipulator is indifferent to whether or not you're actually responding for good reasons. Now, if that's right, okay, if that you say that's right, but at the same time, you seem to be speaking pejoratively about designers who are acting in accordance to this Get Them Hooked book, whatever, hooked. But you've also said that manipulation isn't necessarily wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
So then I wonder, is the takeaway then, look, here's what manipulation is. It happens all the time. It's how a lot of salespeople work. It's how a lot of algorithm developers work, insofar as they're trying to get certain kinds of outcomes. They don't really care about which particular process is engaged in, as long as it's not completely morally abhorrent. And that's all ethically fine. But you've also pointed to some kind of deficiency. So I'm trying to figure out how to put all these pieces together.
Now, good. So I think the deficiency is that in design, like in intentional designing interactions or influences, or in just influencing people in interaction, then manipulative influence just fails by this ideal, which is I influence you, but only I make an effort to reveal reasons to you why you should believe a certain way, or why you should act or desire in a certain way. And I do that because we're in a kind of cooperative shared project. We want to figure out what the world is like or what we have reason to do. And this is the ideal of social influence. And manipulation is a deviation from that ideal. And when I speak, as you say, pejoratively of designers who just get, oh, build habit-forming products. Yeah, perhaps I need to be less harsh on them or on that effort. But I think it just, what I want to emphasize is that in doing so, we might lose track of this important ideal. And with my work, I want to emphasize that ideal and say, by being manipulative, we're deficient in that sense.
Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see if I've got it. There's ideal ways of being, let's just say. There's ideal ways things could go. Then there's less than ideal ways that things might go, but not to the point of being blameworthy or you've done something wrong.
Yep.
And then there's just totally off the rails, you've done the wrong thing.
Yep.
To take it take a non-moral example, let's say I've got a certain kind of health routine, going to the gym, and my ideal is to work out this many hours and consume this many calories, whatever, and I fall short of the ideal, right? Instead of working out or whatever, 5 days a week, I do it 4 days a week. And that's less than ideal. It's fine. No blame. On the other hand, if I set that as my ideal and all I do is sit on the couch and eat Cheetos all day, all right, now maybe blame is not the appropriate attitude, but there's something like things have gone really wrong here. Things have, this is definitely, I can manifest regret and maybe some other people might justifiably manifest condemnation, at least for my rank hypocrisy.
Yes.
And so similarly with morality or ethics, you might think, there's some ideal, the ideal way of interpersonal communications is to engage in this, I'm going to give you good reasons, you're going to respond with reasons, we can engage in this sort of deliberative, co-deliberative project.
Yep.
And so that's what the ideal is. Sometimes we fall a little bit short of this, and we do that by manipulating. So maybe we manipulate in a way like giving my wife good reason to go to the store so I could have some alone time.
Yeah.
Really done the wrong thing. It's less than the ideal way of having a relationship, but I don't deserve severe condemnation or something like that.
Yep.
On the other hand, if I gave her disinformation, oh, you said you wanted to buy X and the X is at that store, but only for a limited time. You got to get there by 2 o'clock. And so she runs out to go get it. Now I've fallen so far below the ideal, I've actually gone to the realm of actual positively, I've actually fallen to the realm of wrongdoing.
Yep.
And so I take it that some of these algorithm designers, salespeople, the people who are developing or designing habit-producing products, some of them, if you like, merely fall below the ideal, and some of them fall so far below the ideal that they're actually in the territory of wrongdoing. And as to where some particular person or company lands, that's going to depend on the particular use case and the context.
Yes, and I think the context is very important, because manipulating your wife to go to the store, okay, whatever, but having a conversation with your wife about, I don't know, divorce or whether to have another child, and there you just aimed for efficiency and you're not giving a fuck about revealing reasons, that is a big problem. You're still not lying. You're not still not outright out to undermine her autonomy or whatever. You're manipulating. But so that's why I think the context matters a lot. And whether we build habit-forming products in context, this context versus this other context where this ideal of shared deliberation is very much important or has much more weight. I think that's an area where there's lots of stuff still to be figured out in from an ethical perspective. Mm. But it's an important step beyond current focus of manipulation as an inherently, intentionally bad form of influence to recognizing it's less than that and also more than that. It's less because it's just indifference, but indifference can be a very big problem.
That's really helpful. It's nice or interesting to see. We need to think about the badness of manipulation, not by appealing to the badness of the motives of the person manipulating, but rather we should think about it in terms of the value of relationships or the kinds of relationships that we want to foster more generally.
Yeah, and the kind of the value of this joint deliberation that we have in this situation. The more you rely on me and that you say, I really trust you, Michael, now to lay out the reasons and to have this, that you also want to pursue truth and want to figure out what you have reason to do. The more you rely on that, and I basically just manipulate you in that instance, I think, then we are in trouble.
Super fascinating.
We are shaping the world, I think, but now we're going grand vision. If you're not careful, I think we're shaping the world in a way where the way we receive information and the way we exchange information will be less and less. But it's not curtailed or constrained by this ideal. It's more and more constrained and governed by the aim to be effective in some sense, to believe the news, to believe what I tell you, rather than how can we build a situation where we both kind of exchange and work towards a shared kind of ability to appreciate the reasons for belief, desire, and emotion. And I think that's a grand kind of problem. But yeah, so I think the next interesting steps research-wise are to figure out more about the ethics of this manipulation. How does it change by context? And then also, of course, to think about concrete design requirements. So if we have this quite nebulous idea, how can you build a recommender system that is non-manipulative? How can you build a mental health assistant that is non-manipulative? And these kind of things.
So how do you design an algorithm that optimizes for getting people to do what you want them to do for the good reasons that they really ought to act on? Yep. Something along those lines.
Yep.
Should be easy. When you figure that out, when you figure out what those criteria
are, you know.
Let me know. Come back.
Yep.
All right. Thanks so much, Michael. This has been great.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening. And now let me thank the people who have made this podcast possible. So first of all, we have Delano Alexander. He's been with me since day one. He showed me even how to start recording a podcast in the first place. He does editing stuff. He's been fantastic. And he does really everything I ask him to and more. I've never met anyone else who just says so much. Yeah, I don't know how to do that, but I'll figure it out. What more could you ask for in a producer? Next up, Jennifer Strong, my podcast guru. I don't know what else to call her. She just has advised me on how to design the podcast, how to grow it. And she's responsible for, if you like, this kind of season 2 relaunch and everything around it. So thank you to you, Jennifer. Next up, Meg Marco, responsible for all the excellent artwork. Before I did the artwork, I didn't really know what I was doing. We put it together. It worked well enough. But I think Meg really did a phenomenal job bringing everything together. Garrett Lang, sound engineer that I frankly don't deserve. He's just too good for this podcast. Don't tell him I said that, though. Next up, Benjamin Kultgen. He is a professor of philosophy who has helped me source guests, identify who's interesting, who has things to say, etc., etc. So without him, I wouldn't have anyone to talk to. And then finally, Ashley Wasilenko, who helps with all manner of administrative things, making sure that the podcast guests find their way to the podcast, can schedule the recording, get their bios and headshots, and really just keeping the show on the rails and me organized. Thanks to all of you. Really appreciate all your hard work.
Ooh.
listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply, in-app only.